All right, here we go in 3, 2, 1. What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast. Dr. Mark Knobloch from the University of Houston just spoke at the Sports Medicine Update about understanding this current generation. And so it was a really good slide. It was a really good show. And there's some, you know, some humor in there, some things that kind of lighten the mood. And one of the cool things was, like, you broke down each generation. But let's go through those again real quick. Because you had it listed as me being born in 1981 as a millennial, and I've never known that I was a millennial. Because it says born 1977 to 1994 is a millennial, or it says generation one.
Yeah, there's a little overlap. There shouldn't be that much. So I hate to say, that's what it is. Because a lot of it, people are associating. There's actual definitions. It's kind of like, when are you a child? People say, well, I think you're a child at this. But there are actual definitions, and those should be correct. I don't remember the exact ages. But a lot of people, they associate it with personalities. Is this person does this and this, oh, they're a millennial. You know, oh, they don't respond. I don't know. I'm trying to think of a stereotype. They show up work late every day they come. Like, oh, they're a millennial. But there's actual definitions, and then there's the stereotypes that go with those. So one of the things we saw was that Gen Z and Gen Y, or the millennials, are often pretty much characterized exactly the same. But there are true differences. But in terms of your question, there's age group, and the Gen X is one of the smallest ones. And so, yeah, you're exactly right. I never thought of that. But according to the true definition, which is somewhat frustrating too, because there's not like a society that creates the definition of what is next. You know, we don't know when Gen Z is going to end. They say 2012, but we don't have a name for the new one. So some people are going to say that Gen Z is going to go on. So it usually, in my research, it's come up ironically through publications. Somebody in a newspaper says they'll say something like, this new generation has grown up with the iPhones, iPads. So it's almost like they're an I generation. So all of a sudden it's like, hey, there's our new generation. It's the I generation. So there's no real way to define that. So probably the reason you were associated with that, that you had that question, is because nobody's really ever told you that, because you're not in the mindset of what the millennials are associated with, because you're not always on your phone, and you're not, you know, living the high life, living with the parents and things like that. And that's what the stereotype out there is. So you get in this dual side of what's the official breakdown versus what do people associate it with. And that's why I showed the stereotypes. You know, Gen X, we hate everybody. We're always grumpy. Well, not really. I mean, I could see some that aspect. I also know Gen X that are the perkiest people out there, but they were born in this time frame, and that's what they're classified as. So.
Yeah, it's just interesting, like you said, because in another slide you showed a Google.
That was my favorite slide.
What is Gen X?
And yeah.
And that's pretty much how I figured out what Gen X is, or what millennials are, is by Googling what is this, and then looking at whatever the first result was.
Yeah, what I found in one of the articles pointed out is that people will Google things that they believe. So millennials are spoiled, and so that becomes a trend in Google. So that's why for those that are listening, I allowed Google to autofill. I typed in the words millennials are, and then all the responses came back very negative, and about Gen Z also. But Gen X was always tired was the most negative one. So clearly people don't associate Gen Z and Gen Y the same way as X. And so, yeah, but if you do a real Google search and say, what is the classification of millennials? That's one thing. But people will Google, like, why are millennials lazy? And so that goes in as a autofill. Mm-hmm. It starts to build up that autofill. And so it's funny to see that, because that tells us what the views are currently in society. So,
yeah, I think you said feeding your own.
You're feeding your own stereotype.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Stereotype. Self-fulfilling prophecy. Like, you just,
yes.
They're lazy.
I know they're lazy, so I'm going to Google it and prove it, and I'm going to make sure that when I Google it, it's the way I want it to come out. So.
All right. So one of the things, you were doing a lot of research. What was the most, interesting fact that you found about the generations?
It was two. One was that 80% of them are physically distressed when they're away from their social or away from their devices. That was shocking to me. I mean, in hindsight, I could see that, because you take their phone away that they always have. And so you're going to suddenly like, oh, wait, there's, I need to get, you know, I need to know, I saw something, I want to verify it. Oh, I don't have my phone on me. So it was important because if we have all these students with us in my class, no phones, and I have an hour and 15 minute long class. So in my head, I'm thinking, okay, what do I need to do to temper that agitation they're feeling? Well, I need to make the class interesting and funny and things like that, but I also need to give them a break. And then, you know, everybody's going to rush and check their phone. And the second thing that the punch in the gut during my presentation was finding out or reading that any complaints about Gen Z is coming from my generation, effectively, that raised these Gen Z, coming from Gen X, because Gen X raised a large portion of the Gen Z. So if we're saying things like, well, they're spoiled, that everybody gets a prize, well, guess who's doing that? My age group. And so that was a really big shock to me, because I should have thought of it, because you figure age difference, but it just didn't click. And when I saw that, I was like, I'm complaining about the very things that, and they're exactly right, because I was a latchkey kid and I loved it, because you come home and I watch G.I. Joe, Transformers, and play Atari. I loved it, you know? Mm-hmm. But yeah, and then I thought, well, I don't want my kids to do this. And it's so much of it, of this presentation, actually hit home, because I was shocked that I do that. It's exactly why, I want to be at all my kids' games, because my parents couldn't always go to my game because they were blue-collar workers. And, you know, my dad, he loved mowing yards, so he was after work. He'd go from his factory job to go mow yards. And so I didn't have my parents at a lot of my things. I had them at a lot. But I want to be there for all of them. I want to coach my daughter's games and things like that. And so much was very eye-opening, even though it was true. But really, to answer your question, it was the 80% are physically distressed, and it was the fact that Gen X largely raised these Gen Z kids, and they're the way they are because of my generation. So,
all right. So you had mentioned right here that you have to change your hour and 15 minute class to where you may still have that rule, no phones, so that they're not distracted or they're really giving you all their attention, but you may go 45 minutes and then say, okay, you have to do a real quick water break or something.
Yes.
Like that. So what else have you done professionally?
One of the things I did is I try and incorporate more videos in. So I've redid a lot of my lectures for this current class that just started last Monday. I've put a lot more videos in because I want to, because, you know, ironically, I love, when I was a student, I loved going in, sitting down and learning via PowerPoint or via, you know, letting the teacher talk. I hated group work. So in my mind, I was always, I'm never doing group work. I think that's, you know, it's just like, teacher doesn't want to teach, they'll just have us do group work. So I loved going in, sitting down, and just for an hour and a half taking notes, and that was my test. And so I did the same thing as I created PowerPoints, and all of my lectures are on PowerPoint. And it's kind of a funny joke. Students, you know, at least we know what we're getting when we go to Dr. Knobloch's classes. It's just we sit there and learn. But what I'm trying to do is now take a learning concept and then show a video afterwards of, you know, maybe CPR compressions or something. Here's the rules according to the American Red Cross or the AHA. Here's what it looks like in a perfect scenario. And then here's a crime scene, accident scene where you see all these screaming people and it's hot and you're on asphalt and you've got screaming people over there and you've got blood. It's not like, and so try and show them a little more videos to get their mind off of PowerPoint and rote repetition of my lectures. So and the breaks and things like that. So, and I try and, you know, interject real, here's what I found in my reviewer comments from the students was they like the personal stories. Okay, here's what we learned. We learned about CPR. Let me tell you the time it happened to me. Here's what happened. Here's what I felt. And here's the outcome. And so I try and incorporate more stories to give them it's like algebra. When am I ever going to use algebra? You know, well, here's when you're going to need to know CPR, what happens when it actually occurs. So that too.
Gotcha. Very good. And then you also mentioned the way that you're raising your kids, that you want to be at their games. So doing this research, what have you changed as a parent?
Oh, man. Okay. I have to go off topic and say that I'm a yeller. And I watched a video of a lady that says, I'm a yeller. And I said, that's it. It makes sense. So it's my kid, my one of them just turned 6 2 days ago, and the other's 4 and a half. So they're going to be in that, what's probably going to be the iGeneration, the iPhone, iPad, things like that, the tablet. So I don't know if they're there yet and they're moldable, but I guess there's one thing I have done is I'm very big on accountability. So if when my daughter signed up for softball practice, I don't care, or if she swimmed up, she's just about to finish swim practice. When we sign up, we are committed to that. If you don't want to go to swimming that day, some parents would say, okay, well, we won't go swimming. I'd say, no, you're going to swimming. We committed to swimming. We bought you equipment for softball. You're going to softball practice. So part of me wants to avoid that kind of non-established boundaries we talked about that current generations have is, you know, 8 o'clock to them means 8 to 8:15. It's all, I still got here at 8. So I'm trying to establish boundaries, but that's kind of not exactly what you're asking, because it's more of, am I conforming to anything? And I haven't yet, because I don't think they're at that age where the things can match up with their age very well. But for one thing, I'm trying to make sure they have established boundaries of, if we say we're doing something, we're going to do it. If dad says you lose chocolate milk because you didn't do whatever, then you're being held to that unless you earn it back. And I also want to establish that, you know, firm boundaries. Bedtime's 8:30. We're going to 8:30. I don't want them to get into the mindset of around this time is my bedtime, you know. So 8:30, but it's 8:45. He'll let me watch this. So kind of both sides. I've tried to prevent some of the things from happening that I think will happen with this generation. And I'm also trying to expecting that I will conform to some of them as well. So.
Yeah, because there's definitely things that I see, you know, with the kids having to have their phone all the time. And,
yeah.
You know, I didn't know that. Actually, we're kind of in the process of adoption, and one of the mm-hmm. things that they...
Congratulations on that. That's awesome.
They said that, you know, those kids, they may need that. You have to completely change to understand their stress level and who they are and where they are and where they're coming from. And, you know, as a teacher, there's a lot of things that I learned from that, you know, because I don't know all of these kids' stories. Some of them mm-hmm. may have been sexually abused that day mm-hmm. before they came here, and they're doing the best they can to even be there mm-hmm. and not, you know, being torn apart.
And my neighbor gave me a good perspective on this, because, you know, at first, my first thought when we had, you know, my kids were 2 and 3 and 4 years old, is like, no, they won't have a phone till they're 16. And my neighbor said something very interesting. He said, yeah, but you know what? My kids have their phone, and by them having their phone, there's a lot more accountability. I know where they're at all times, and they have to answer their phone when I call. Versus when I was, you know, in high school, I leave that house. I was gone. Nobody knew where I was. I mean, I'd tell them. I was like, I'm going to my friend's house. But they had no way to contact me other than to call the parents. Well, what if we were getting a drink at the convenience store? Does that mean I'm in another country or county, or am I really just at the store? So they said that having their phones was really good for keeping up with your kids. Yes, they're texting all the time, but that's kind of a freedom that you want to eventually, you know, at an older age. But something else that I thought was interesting was that, and this was really shocking to me. I watched this on the news, is because of obviously social media, you get harassment and you get bullying going on. But it was really interesting. I watched this on the news because this made me think about how much of a helicopter parent am I going to be, because it was on one of the local news channels. They were talking about kids and what do they do when they get bullied. And the question came up, well, do you tell your parents? And the kids said overwhelmingly, no. It's like, why would you not tell your parents you're getting bullied? And the answer was that they're afraid of their parents, that their parents will do something about it. And so it becomes, well, now I'm embarrassed because my dad called my friend, my bullier's parents. And now I'm afraid they'll call me a baby and I'll tell mommy everything. But it was really shocking, because part of me says I want to protect them from getting bullied. But how much involvement will it take for you or myself to keep their kid from getting bullied on social media? Yes, you can say, well, I won't let them have a Snapchat account or a Facebook account. But the other side is, are they going to go and create one themselves, because all their friends have it? And then it becomes, well, I'm the only kid in my class that doesn't have a phone. Well, is that because I'm protecting you? Or are you getting picked on because of that? And, you know, it's this zigzag of which direction do you go? You know, do you protect them? Do they not want you to protect them? You know, and you get into that. So it's going to be interesting. I mean, but at the same time, you think 10 years ago, what was technology like? And my kids, like I said, are 6 and 4. 10 years from now, we don't even know what it's going to be like. You know, you try and predict. It's like Facebook will probably, probably won't. Somebody else, some new device will be out there. And so it's crazy to think about, but yeah.
All right, so what other thoughts do you have about, like, the way you're changing the And because you're changing athletic training by educating the next generation of educators or athletic trainers, what else are you doing to help instill the work ethic, or what are you doing to advocate on behalf of your students to professionals to say, hey, you guys don't have to work 100 hours a mm-hmm. week to be good at your job. These guys yeah. can do the same job yeah. in 30 hours a week.
We've talked about that a lot because there's a stigma among some groups in athletic training that if you're not working 78 hours a week, you just don't want to work hard. And that's not it. What I tell the students is if you're working 80 hours a week, you're donating about $80,000 to that school because it's a full-time position. If you're instead of working 40 hours a week, you're working two jobs for the price of one. You figure salary and benefits, it's you're $70,000-$80,000. And so, and you have no family life. I mean, realistically, and you know, it's one thing to work Friday night football or go to work at 11 in the morning and work until 10 at night. That's completely different. I know I always respected Bob Stoops because Bob made it a point. He wanted his coaches to take their kids to school every morning. So, you know, and then I know there's other football coaches that want to be there at 5 a.m. and you work till 2 in the morning. And so after a while, there's going to be some point you look back and you're like, what am I accomplishing? So there's nothing wrong with that. And I have immense respect for people that want to work that and enjoy their jobs when they do that. Because, I mean, that's a work ethic I just don't have. I mean, I don't want to work 80 hours a week. And so with what's nice, and it goes back to your question, if we're hiring more people, let's take advantage of that. Instead of making two people work 70 hours a week, let's make one work 50 and then rotate this, you know, flexible schedule, and the other one works 50 and gets everything covered. Everybody's healthy. It's you know, it's a very good sports medicine type setting. And so they can still have a family life. And one of the biggest things, they avoid burnout, because that happens. It happened to me. I mean, I was the only one at my job at a college, and I just, after a while, I said, you know what, I'm just not doing it myself. I had a grad assistant, but it was a very mild form of burnout. I wanted to stay in the profession. I just didn't want to stay in the clinical setting of college or high school. And so if we keep people from getting burnt out by giving them time that they deserve, I mean, it's a 40-hour work week legally that they're working 70, 80, or 90, you know, at what point do we say, that's not fair? Yes, and this goes exactly into my talk. Is it a generational thing? Well, you need to be there and you need to do the job no matter what. Well, okay, fine. Why not work 140 hours a week? You know, where do you draw the line at? What, we have 40 is required effectively. Some people work 50, 60. When you get in the 70s or 80s, now you have another full-time position there. And so I tell our students, these are questions you've got to ask on the interview. You know, what are your work expectations? Do you need to be there? Do you need to cover all home events? Do you travel with teams? And so it's to protect them, but it's to keep them in the profession, to make them not hate the profession a year in, you know. Excuse me. One of the interesting things that came about with this whole accredited program was a lot of the practitioners were saying that we're putting students out that have no idea what the real world is like, because they're protected in their student days of working 20, 30 hours. Fine, but I don't think the profession's really fallen apart. So clearly it's worked. You know, we don't have, you know, since 2003, we don't have nobody entering the profession. We now have people that are doing their 2 years, six semesters. They may have 1,200 hours of education, and they're in their fifth, sixth, seventh, 10th year at a high school, and they're doing just great. So clearly we don't have to show them that, you know, as a student, you need to be working 60 hours to see what the profession's really going to be like. So that's the big thing is to just get them to, you know, it's quality time, you know, sitting in the athletic training room at, you know, because the coaches are there at 6 o'clock having meetings. Do you need to be there at 6 o'clock if nobody shows up until 7:30, you know, kind of, you know, reduce your downtime and make quality time. But I think one of the, you know, to answer your question, one of the big things I do is really preach to them is you've got to have family life. You got to have personal time. So our students, by the time they do classes, clinicals and studying, they still need to factor time in for social life, go home and visit. You know, we encourage them. If you're done at work at your clinicals, go home. Don't hang around just to be seen. It's one of my pet peeves at work is people that they see you leaving because you got there at 7 a.m. They see you going home at 5 o'clock and it's like, well, it must be nice to go home. Yeah, because I've got all my work done. What do you want me to do? Yeah. You know, and there's that stigma of you need to stay there and make your presence known. No, you don't. Go home. Do your job and go home. If you're not meeting your responsibilities, then you need to stay there and do your job. If you get your job done, go home. Now, you know, in athletic training, it's different because, you know, you're tied into coaching schedules. But that might mean do your morning treatments, take 3-4 hours off and go do your personal stuff, go take a nap, come back at 1 o'clock and do your treatments. So it's just looking for those kind of scenarios too.
Kind of wrapping it up, one of the, I guess, more eye-opening things that you said was that there was multi-generations, I think like 10 generations or something like that, that they had studied, and there is no significant mm-hmm. difference in the work yeah. ethic or any of that stuff. And basically, like you said, we are feeding our own expectations, our own ideas about this by Googling it or by repeating mm-hmm. it or tweeting it or whatever. And there's really no difference. Mm-hmm. Just the way that it's approached.
It's a societal thing. Yeah. I mean, there's so many things I've seen where people believe their own is the best. Could be their, you know, their own generation. You could see it in religion. You could see it in the country you live in. They always say, no, where I'm at's the best. Everybody else, nobody compares. And yeah, that survey was 2,500 people. There was no difference in work ethic, job satisfaction among all blue collar workers. And so that just kind of, that was really designed to test that whole millennial thing about millennials don't want to work hard, they're lazy or whatever. And it just shows that the beliefs aren't there. The data isn't reporting what people are saying. And so again, you go, you know, you ask any Gen Xer, you know, except the people here, go to your school board meeting and just throw it out there. You know, what do you guys think of Gen X? What do you think of millennials? And you'll probably get a few eye rolls. But then you really ask them, where do you get that from? And they'll be like, oh, just, you know, I've just seen it. What? And they can't really define that. They're just kind of going with that stigma and that social belief that, you know, oh, all millennials are lazy, or all Gen Z is, their parents give them a prize. Well, okay, fine, that may be true, but guess what? You have no choice but to accept that. You gave them a prize. They're used to prizes. So when you tell them, go clean the athletic training room, they're like, but what do I get? And so you have to accept that that's all they know. And so that's why I said, you know, it doesn't have to be a physical prize. It might mean when that's all done, you get to go home. That's a prize versus staying until, you know, 5 o'clock or something. So no matter what, and like I said, when I started, it was actually very eye-opening for me because I didn't know the level of what was going on. I just saw it as the same thing. Oh, millennials, geez, you know, or, oh, you know, young kids these days, they don't understand. That's been being said for thousands of years. It's not changing. It's not going to change. But every generation thinks the one under them is worse off, or not worse off, worse. And the one above them, they are all grumpy and they don't understand how my generation is. So, you know, every generation is going to feel they're the best. And so, and then like I, you know, joked about, you know, the Gen Zs who I was talking about 20 years, they're going to be talking how bad the next generation is. And so, you know, it's kind of, we say in our profession that we keep getting older, everybody else stays the same, especially in high school. You know, they keep changing and we keep getting older, but are you going to accept that? And you know, there needs to be a mindset where we're not forcing them to change. We're trying to guide them into why we need them to do things different, but also understand that, you know, maybe theirs is okay after all. I just need to make these little tweaks and it'll work fine for both of us.
So. You're just quoting Matthew McConaughey and Dazed and Confused? Or?
I don't know. Was I?
So he says, that's what I love about high school.
Well, no, I do. I've had people tell me that, you know, jokingly. They said we keep getting older, and it's true. And then, you know, a new thing comes in, and it's like, oh, now it's fun. It was, you know, it was MP3 players. And then now it's iPhones, and it was cell phones, and then now it's smartphones. And, you know, at some point we need to embrace that, which most of us do. We just don't realize it because we've changed. We don't necessarily stay on our phones as long because we're doing our job, and our job isn't an IT or a technical job. So, but, you know, things like injury tracking on your phone, mm-hmm. you can do that. You Google, somebody says, you know, you can do medicine searches, pill identification on your phone apps. And so the technology's there. It's just what level do we embrace it, and what level do we say, nope, I got a job over here to do, I need to put my phone away. So,
yeah, so definitely a good talk. Hopefully we got it all in there. If not, I know you're going to be at SWAT. I don't know when this will actually be released, but Mark Knoblach, University of Houston, MAT on Twitter. It's UofHMAT.
Yeah, we don't use Twitter as much because the people that follow us are more on our MAT page, so Master of Athletic Training, University of Houston. If you search for that on Facebook, you'll find a lot more information And then our website is hhp.uh.edu/MAT. And we, you know, email, contact us, whatever anybody has questions or anything. And I want to make sure to congratulate you on your 6 miles the other day. So I'm sure you haven't talked about that, but you went from doing nothing to running 6 miles, and now you're doing a 5K at the NATA. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I know. If I'd just gone, that's what I told Sarah. I was like, if I'd just gone 0.4 more, it'd be 10K.
Oh, that's the worst. Right. People joke, right. Like, I ran 5.94 miles. I was like, just run the extra 0.6, 0.06 and get it done.
Yeah.
But that's okay. You did your six. So
yep, there you go.
Awesome.
All right. Well, Mark, always a pleasure, and we'll be hearing from you.
Thank you.